originally from Tehran, Mamali Shafahi is a sculptor, filmmaker, and video artist based in Paris. His work has been shown in Tokyo, Amsterdam, Athens, Istanbul, Antwerp, and Berlin, as well as, of course, Paris and Tehran. We sat down at his apartment in July to talk about life, art, existence, and creation. Happy listening, you filthy animals.
Are we rolling?
We're rolling.
Awesome. Well, Mamali, thanks so much for coming on to 27 Rouge.
Sure, thanks.
I start most of my interviews with this question, and this interview will be no exception. And it's interesting to see the different directions that people take this. Who is Mamali?
Okay. Mamali, of course, I mean, the first thing I can say, I'm from Iran, which is, I think, it's a quite a special things I always carry with me, because, you know, it's not like you're coming from Sweden, or, you know, it's like, I guess for you as an American, you always, it became part of like your character. And then I'm an artist. I moved to Paris in 2005. I studied fine art here, performance and video. And then I was kicked out from school because I was doing like a series of performances. They were like quite anarchist, I would say now, but I couldn't see that way when I was younger. And then I moved to Germany for a year at the Academy of Düsseldorf. I studied there. It was a really good opportunity for me to experience something different than French art school system. And then since then I work as a, you know, as an artist, filmmaker, VR maker, I would say advisor, curator. I try to do as much as I can. Like, I do like lots of collaboration with sound artists, with the video artists, with the VR project. It's a long project with another guy. We do, you know, it's like any term of like creative processes, it interests me.
It's cool. I remember, must have been like 15 or no, I was 16 or 17, and I had moved to Paris alone. And I saw, I think it was the Grand Palais or somewhere, this Bill Viola exhibition. And I bought an enormous, like the size of this painting, I mean, an enormous Bill Viola poster. Uh-huh. That when I went back to New York, because, I mean, I was in high school, like school was starting again, I had to leave. So when I left Paris, I brought this huge poster with me, and I put it on my bedroom wall, my childhood bedroom wall. It's the Grand Palais. I was 16, the Grand Palais in 2014, July something 2014. I don't remember what the exhibition was. I don't remember what was in it. But I remember putting up that poster, and it hangs there to this day. So when you talk about video art, my mind thought, as an impressionable 16-year-old, I was in Paris seeing some pretty cool video art.
Yeah, I always kind of envy these guys, the first generation of video art, like, because the medium was completely a new discovery for all this guy, you know, like this old, this new cameras, you could, you know, and now all this like experimental process. With scientific, with you know, theorician, with all these like artists and writers, and I always like kind of when I was studying video, I was like, I wish I was from that generation, being like, you know, everything like, or imagine like photography when like about like more than 100 years ago, when, you know, all this. But then that's why I push myself to VR, because I had the same feeling when I was working on VR, because I was like my collaborator Ali, he was like one of the first VR guy, like and everything we made, we knew like this is gonna be like a historical experimental process, you know, like learning from each other, trying to, and that's, I think, that's the beauty of the new medium. And but I think we can do a lot with video, and of course, like, the, you know, it's kind of a complementary process from generation to the other one. It's like, yeah.
I was in Venice last year at the film festival, and I remember I didn't watch a single movie. I spent all my time on the Lido, which was, not on the Lido, was it, there was a separate island, little island, you know.
Lido, right?
I think maybe it was the Lido,
yeah.
For VR. Maybe you were there.
Okay.
And did you go to Venice last year?
No.
But so they had this whole a separate island just for immersive theater, and I got to try like 50 or 60 different virtual reality experiences. Some of them were interactive. Some of them were like stationary. Some of them you were like walking around, or you were in like a room. I actually interviewed a, I don't know if he's French, this guy Thomas Philpot. We interviewed him on the podcast. I should reach out to him because he lives in Paris, thinking of this. But it was cool. It was interesting. I think it still has some work. It's not without its issues, but it's cool. It's exciting. I don't know. Do you think it's like a fad, or do you think it's a fixture?
Or will become, it's funny, a fixture? Because I still remember like the first time I seriously experienced VR was at Frieze Art Fair, actually John Ruffman, and it was the Ouroboros.
Yeah.
Talking about that. It was like you were sitting on a snake eating his tail, and then you were from there, you were starting in a really like a, you were in a trip. And then when I removed my headset, I had, it was the opening of the fair, and I had all these people having champagne, and you know, and I was like, yeah, fuck, yeah. This you know, this connection with the, I mean, I wasn't there for, I don't know, 5 to 10 minutes, I don't remember, but I was like, wow, this is super interesting. Then and then what we did with Ali through our VR experience, we look at it as a lab. In a way, like we care even about the before and after experience, because as that point was remindable, you know, I remember that point of like removing the headset and being completely, you know, disconnected. Then we started to working in a physical installation, changing the elements before this experience for the audience, and doing stuff during the experience. And you know, like, I think we can do a lot with VR, but in I'm not sure about the direction right now, because it seems like, I mean, artists do interesting stuff, but like, just as a, like, as I said, no one for now, I mean, I don't know much artists, at least in contemporary art, they are constantly focused on VR. Like, they do one project and then maybe 5 years after, or they stop completely. And that's, I think, it's kind of, you know, like what's happened with video art, what I said, and the video art had this constantly repetition of, you know, like the experience one after the other, you know, like sharing this. But in VR, I have a feeling it's kind of a, I'm talking about not the digital artist, I'm talking more about the visual artist doing VR. It's already, from what I saw, it's constantly getting cut, like, you know what I mean? It's, that's why for us, unfortunately, it's also happened now for a few years, we had to stop. But we really like the idea of like adding experience one after the other thing. Like even with some psychedelic drug, we try to make stuff to see how your brain react. And we want, you know, it's like it's the whole new world. And as I said, you can even work with the medicine and then the scientific and all this, like, there's, because it's like the whole question of perception is completely affected by this new world, and it's really cool to, I mean, for me, that was the most interesting aspect about VR, like how far we can go, even like, you know, like even in physical installation, we designed like different position. Like the, one of the episodes we made, you were sitting in the lotus position and killing people, but you constantly remember you are in the peace position, but you are doing, you know, like the whole ergonomy stuff and the whole body position and all the, like, the, even, you know, like this feeling of being suddenly blind and then being welcomed to a new world and all this transition of like how you mm-hmm. from one stage going to the other stage, you know, it's, I remember we did one of, in one of the work we did here is a tunnel of people. Instagram, they, I mean, it was about Instagram, the project called Nerdfunk, and it was a tunnel of all this selfie of people with this Instagram filter. And then you had, you felt like scared by it, or like being in it. I mean, they were like in the daily life, normal people selfie videos from Instagram. But when it, when you experience it in a tunnel, with all this like immersive sound, and you had a feeling you were like, they're gonna almost attack you, or, you know, like this old, like the claustrophobia of this, all this mass information kind of like coming to you. And, you know, anyhow, it was, yeah, I think it's a really interesting niche, but I think, I mean, what I experienced, I think would be really nice if artists can see it a bit more serious as a medium. But it's it, the difficult part is there is lots of technical limit, like in compared to the time and the energy and the budget consuming you're making a VR project. Probably if you make it in a in the 2D screen, would be, you know what I mean, if it's really worth it to like that's always a question. And honestly, myself, I would say in the total experiences I saw, I would say more than half of them, I wouldn't see like why it was in VR. You know, it was just like the excitement of a new medium. Like that's all. Like,
that's a good point, though, right? Is like doing it just to why you don't, you know, doing it just to do it, doing it just to say that it is in VR. It's like putting.
For us, was always like we always repeated like, remember, like in 10 years. That gonna be a, like a very primitive experience.
Yeah.
And then if the contents are not rich enough, it's gonna be completely rubbish.
Yeah.
That was with my collaborator. We were always repeating every day to remembering, like, not the excitement of, oh, okay, this is like a wow, you know, for the first time, but what happened in the fifth time, and then in, when you try the same thing in a 50th time, you know, like if you can make so people impressed with or because it's just something new and people, they never experience it, then that's the phase of like entertainment in VR is actually for me where the bug is, like where the problem is coming, because
where the what is bark?
Yeah, the, like the, it's the great problem of VR, because mainly the VR project is limited to just entertain people.
Yeah,
because people, they never experience it.
Mm-hmm.
But for us, it was like beyond that. We said like, okay, imagine like in 10 years, people, they all try VR maybe every week. You know, in the future, we never knew, and how, you know, how far we can go, then keep the project still interesting, the content still, although it's probably will look vintage and retro because, you know, the evolution of the technology is super fast, you know, already since we started, when we look at the earliest stuff we made, it sounds already vintage, you know, it's kind of funny. But yeah, but the content will, I mean, for us was that, like, the content needs to be always valuable.
I think about the NFT stuff a lot. And there was some really good art, and it allowed, you know, democratized artists to be able to get their work in front of more people and to allow them to make money. But then there was also a lot of silliness, you know, these cartoon apes selling for hundreds of thousands of dollars. And this question of fixture versus fad is fascinating because you have a new exciting technology. You can use the medium in innovative ways to tell sort of, you can make the most of the medium, either whether it's telling new or different stories based on what's available or keeping things fresh and exciting rather than just riding on the buzz, you know, riding on the buzz of, ooh, here's VR. And then you're right, in 10 years, it's primitive. People are going to be like, this, what, you know, what is this? This is not art. This is just a sort of commercial, like, nothing, you know, and I think people know, but I mean, it's tough, right? We were talking about this before. As an artist, you also, you have to eat, you have to do business, you have to go to the events and whatever. And one question I think about now with all these social media algorithms is the extent to which people are creating content, but like, organically, or are they creating content because they know that's what their audience and or the algorithm is going to like? And the algorithm rewards you for like basically feeding it what you, a limited number of things. There are some things that the algorithm doesn't prioritize and some things that the algorithm does, and it's constantly changing. And you figure out very quickly which, if you try a bunch of different content, which of it will like take off, you know? And so it's tough. It's really tough to even answer this question, but you know, they call all of these, everyone on TikTok calls themselves a creator. They are creating things, right? But I wonder whether a lot of the content production, particularly on social media, that's happening is organic and the artist has something that they want to share. I mean, again, I don't know if we can call all these people artists, but that the person has a story they want to tell, or whether they're simply, they find what their followers like, they find their thing, and they just buckle down on it, you know, double down, go, man, I don't know. What do you make of this? I don't know if there's a question there. I'm thinking.
No. Yeah. I mean, this is, you know, like when you work in a project about like Nerdfunk was a lens for us, like to look at the whole, all this phenomenal of social media, especially Instagram, then it's, I mean, like any other phenomenon has its own good side, and you know, and then the change is interesting. We analyzed a lot, like the whole, because we didn't want to be judgmental, we didn't much want to be black and white kind of decision maker about like, okay, social media is horrible or social media is amazing, you know. We were really like constantly looking, like one of, like for example, one of the idea we found super interesting about social media was like how much it pushed the boundaries of like the intimate, like people before social media, they would never express themselves that much.
Yeah.
You know, this is like amazing. But in the other hand, like as you said, there is also like lots of unnecessary information you deal with, or you have to, you know, like also in the, also like you can, for example, another idea we got through like, or analyzed through Instagram was like how much you are a narcissist person or a voyeurist person, like how much you want to be the subject of the social media and how much you just want to observe and check the other people. You can, you know, like it's kind of a, almost is like a therapy, like you can get lots of element just through, like, you know, like you would never think about these things if social media didn't exist. Then for us was always like we kind of like constantly we're like, okay, this is a positive point, this is a negative point, this is like something unnecessarily, this is like needs to change. You know, I think my my real critic is like, we are just, I mean, it's not a critic, but the situation is we are diving in a really almost dangerous situation without knowing the cause. Like, I think we kind of hear much more about, like, because we are into it now. It's a present moment. It's not digestible, like, 100% yet, because we don't even know, like, you know, we don't know even, like, in 10 years if, like, having the phone with, you know, like this, if it is good for your neck, you know, all these things are, like, sounds for now okay, but maybe in 10 years gonna create, like, the huge problems of, like, physical or mental or... Then it's, as I said, it's like a lab situation. Like, it's, everything is kind of experimenting in the very fast, accelerate way. Then one day I wake up, I'm, like, almost scared and, like, very dark and very, like, oh my God, we are going to the off-road, you know, it's like the direction is not good at all, da, da, da. And one day I'm like, oh, I'm completely fascinated by what we are able to make. I mean, like, as a human being, but one of the aspects of my work is about, like, how much life is magical, and as with, as a human being, how much we are able to make all this shit happening, from technology to industry to sport to music to art to, you know, like, high rise, you know, we just forget, we are looking for magic, but actually we, what we, I mean, the most magical thing is ourselves, you know, our bodies and our organ and whatever. And yeah, I'm like, and I think what I, the way I deal with all these things is like, it's like I just try to be in my own dream about it. Like, if the reality is dark, then try to create your own beautiful reality, you know. Somehow I'm like, and I think like in that term, then you understand all the people do TikTok or whatever, because they're kind of trying to just be, make fun of it, or being, you know, like doing something, which I really also enjoy how, like, people, they became actor of their own life. And this is quite interesting also, like, you know, like I'm 41 years old, and then my generation, if you would create a content, you have to go to Hollywood, as you said, or, you know, or in any country, to TV or media. But now you have, like, your phone in front of you. You can create whatever. And this is beautiful.
Yeah.
All the contents are trash. Doesn't matter, you know, because who said this is good or this is bad? You know, like, people are, and this experience are just interesting, you know. But I think we need to, like, just, for me, it's also always, like, kind of zoom back and watch stuff in a wider perspective to see how you, you know, not just, because the whole situation is push you to be there, because the amount of the contentity of the content is huge. Then just being able to rolling it and digest it and try to see, like, what I want from that, it's already, at least today, it seems, for the capacity of our brains already too much. Then how you can get even a bit step back and watch it and da da da, and you look at it again in a different perspective, sounds complicated.
I agree with most of this, and I find this to be fascinating. This concept of creating your own reality, your own dream world. I wonder where, you know, for some people, where does the dream end and where does reality begin? I think there doesn't necessarily have to be a distinction. They're in a world on fire. The world is on fire. I mean, there's bad things happening everywhere. There's parts of, you know, Paris is a beautiful city. But there's some very dark and nasty corners, just like anywhere else in the world. You know, the nastiness manifests itself differently. in different places. But it's always there. The world is not, to quote Rocky Balboa, the world is not sunshine and rainbows. And, you know, I don't think it would be an interesting world to live in. But each of us has an ability and a responsibility, I would say, to create our own reality and to see the beauty, because there's always a degree of beauty, even in very bad circumstances. And I, you know, I encourage people to ameliorate their circumstances to the extent that's possible for them. But you've brought up a very good point. There's human life itself, I think, is a beautiful thing. And we ought to recognize that, especially in the days where, you know, where not to get into a comparative thing, but we're living in Paris, or we're living in New York or whatever, one of these big, nice cities. Oh, I missed my bus. Oh, I, you know, all these little things, and you get angry. It's like, slow down there, tiger. Life, this is like ridiculously good where we are right now. This is just dreamy, you know. But even if we didn't have any of this, like, there could still be some beauty, maybe.
Yeah. I think also, like, one of my issue is, like, I mean, I go back from the beginning, like, why I said I'm from Iran is important things about Mamelis, because, you know, Iran geographically is kind of like this, I mean, the Middle East is a kind of center of the world. Then if I give you an example of, like, how I grew up, I mean, I was watching movies from Bollywood, like Indian movies,
yeah,
to like Chinese movies, Japanese, like from like the Gulf countries, Turkish movie, and then, you know, and not only movies, like the music, I mean, and then so on, of course, European and American the most. And but you are like, and then Russia on top, then the way I grew up, it was always, I mean, it was very westernized, but it was always like some tendency of like, okay, looking also to the east, to the different culture, and then I was privileged to be able to travel a lot, and I was like, discover all this different culture and continent, and then I just realized, unfortunately, like in the way we grew up in the Western kind of society, I mean, like the influence of Western society in the whole world, our direction is a one big highway, and we are just all trying to, you know, like it's a one-liner future we see for everyone. And then I think what I see with the, like, Gen Z youth, I think that, yeah, like, I think that for me is the hope is there, because you start to look at the world in it's not only one direction, you know. I see like people looking, but still I think it needs to be more like the school of thought needs to be changed, because it's too much. We are all too much influenced by capitalism, which is okay. But I mean, like, as I said, we didn't have the time to recognize what's happening. You know, like, we were just like, we were in the fast car, you know, like I remember millennium. We thought like, okay, in 2020, it's going to be a utopian world, because we're going to live with the help of technology and whatever we were imagining about, like, in 20 years.
Yeah,
we would
flying think, like, cars.
You know, like, I remember still all this video clip of, like, from Michael Jackson to Backstreet Boys and all this, you know, like, all this, like, spice shape. And then
yeah. It
was a pure positive, almost happiness and joy from the future. But then now we just realize, okay, no, this is... And then...
We can't help ourselves.
Yeah, because... Even the idea of satisfaction, it's one-liner, because in the Western culture, like, mainly satisfaction is related to joy. Like, okay, if you want to be happy, eat, have sex, drink, drug and all this, like, rarely someone telling you, like, no, you can have satisfaction from fasting. We are in the system, like, I feel like it was already decided for us, kind of, you know, like...
What was already decided for us?
I mean, we were accepted. I mean, I'm talking about mostly, like, generation of my parents and my generation, which I really like about your generation, is all about reconstruction, you know? Like what I really like is look about you guys is, like, you won't easily say yes to any order or any, you know, like, it's always like,
yeah,
why, yeah, yes, why no, why I shouldn't do that, you know? It's already, I mean, all this, like, imagine, like, I give you an example, like, the word gender, all my whole life I hear it, maybe, I don't know, the same amount of, like, I hear it the last 5 years.
Yeah.
Or ethnic, or all this, you know, all the question we are, like...
Ethnic. Oh, ethnic.
Ethnic questions, yeah. You know, but, you know, it's, I think that's the beginning of the new era, which is, I'm very optimistic about.
I think it's good to question things as a general principle. Don't just accept things as true, because that's the way you're told that they are. I think it can spiral into out of control sometimes when people have, like, yes, I believe that everyone should live their own reality. They're the own main character of the story. They're the own actor in their own life. I understand this. But there are things that people have to, like, agree upon in order to get along in society. I mean, I don't know. Like, you can't fly. You don't jump out of a window. You know, you can't say I'm a bird, so I'm gonna jump, yeah, out of a building and fly. But I do think I'm not a huge fan of post-structuralism, like the whole. You know, postmodernist Foucault movement, personally. I take ideological issue with it because I don't think it's necessarily productive for human flourishing. But at the same time, I agree with the spirit of it. And the spirit is, we can't just accept things as they are. We should always ask the question. Now, I don't particularly think that that group of thinkers was, you know, Foucault and South and them were, and their contemporaries were asking necessarily good questions. But I think the fact that they're asking questions at all is a good thing. Like, I mean, this is, I haven't thought about this. This is interesting. There are, you know, what, like in France, a lot of times, what do you do for work? You do what your parents did. It's, you know, your dad's a blacksmith, you're a blacksmith. Your dad's a baker, you have to run the bakery shop. Who's going to run the bakery shop? You are, you know, and that's what happened. And there was not for a long time, frankly, I think in Europe, a lot of social mobility, because people just sort of stayed where they were. You know, you did what your dad did and your grandfather before that and his grandfather before that. We are butchers. We are bakers. We are whatever. We're the ones who slaughter the cattle in this town and provide meat, or we're the ones who bake the bread or do the whatever. Now, I think there's more, but mom, why? But dad, why? And I think a lot of it is, I don't know. I don't want to say it came from America, but certainly you see it in America. Like, there's this trope, there's this, like, Disney movie trope of, those are your dreams, Dad, not mine. And it's kind of, you know, ironic and whatever, but it has taken effect. And I think that's a good thing that we are, I mean, you started off by saying, you know, I'm Iranian. I would call myself American, even if I don't really live there anymore, because there are some things that are deeply rooted. And what's deeply rooted for me is this concept of self-invention, of creating yourself. It's fundamental to the American tradition. America as a country was created relatively more recently than many other countries in the world. You know, it shouldn't exist. There's no reason, you know, nothing like that had existed before. We're going to take people of different races, different religions, speak different languages. We're going to dump them into the same place and we're going to say, all right, get along with each other. What unites us? Values, constitution, shared values. It's not united by race. It's not united by religion. It's not united by any, because it's a hodgepodge of everything else. And what did that create? People had to create this new identity. Okay, now I'm not just Italian. I'm Italian American. Now I'm not just from, you know, Irish. I'm Irish American, you know? And there's a difference. You're neither American. Like, there's no native, the word Native Americans, so we're indigenous people. But beyond the indigenous people, there's not that many other, like, Native Americans. And then they're not really, like, fully American. They're not fully Italian. What are there? There's all these hyphenated identities going on, which I think it's fascinating. I think it's a good thing. And I can't shake that from... I can't shake that Americanness in me. And now I think there's more of it than ever everywhere in the world of this questioning going on.
Yeah, sure. I mean, like, as I said about, like, how you would be able to have a wider perspective about what's happening. First of all, you start from your own individual life experience, right? And then I just, as you said, like the this situation of the American situation, it started to be more like a global citizen, like citizen of the world in the way, because you didn't really attach to any rules or any, like, you know, it's a different story when you go to Greece or Iran or Egypt or China. You know, it's this, we're still stuck with so many tradition, but, you know, it's, which is, again, like, there is not black and white things about it. Like, it has its own value and it sort of has its inconvenient in the way of, like, thinking, you know. But I think what is really interesting, as you mentioned, like, I more and more believe, like, the one can get to be a wider point of view about, like, the whole situation, or the one are able to experience this multicultural, like, being the citizen of the world, being able to, like, you know, you as an American living in Australia, me as an Iranian living in France, and, you know, like, someone else from China living in UK, you know, like, I think this is really help us to, as you said, organically reconstruct and see the in a different angle, look at the things in a different angle, you know. And I think, as you said, like, I think American culture positively was the base of this kind of school of idea of, like, how, because of not being attached to any rules or tradition or ethnic or nation, you know, like, it was just like, it was built, like, as you explained, you know. And I think that's another beauty of, like, the contemporary human being, like.
I do wonder. I wonder about identity a lot, and the extent to which some of it's fixed, some of it's baked in, and what can be created on top of that. I think there's infinitely many combinations and variations. People are changing. But what happened, I think it's a mistake maybe to try to suppress or bury your nature, who you are, or the things that you can change. You have certain experiences that shape things that are just out of your control. You were born where you were born, you know?
Yeah.
And that, so sometimes people try to reinvent everything. You can never reinvent everything. There's always like a canvas. You can paint the canvas, but you're starting with your start. There's some sketches on there to begin with. You know, there's a blueprint maybe. Sure. Okay, tell me about some of your work. What are you working on right now?
These days I'm like, well, I mean, I'm creating my own storytelling out of all this. Like, if I go back a bit,
what kind of work do you do as a whole for the audience who might not know?
Yeah, I do like installation as like a writer medium. That means like sculpture, objects, video, light, sound, performance sometimes. It's like the whole, I can kind of call it like total art. Like,
yeah,
it's the whole immersive experience. And but it's changing by, each show has its own theme and subject, you know. Like recently, I'm very focused of like how much we are similar to apes and gorillas. Like I make all this like the...
I saw one of the epoxy busts, or I don't know what they're called, of the gorilla.
Yeah.
And it looked awesome.
Especially I just realized, I mean, by making, you know, by collecting all these videos of, you know, like... monkeys and apes and I mean all this like I just realized, first of all, I mean, as we know, like how similar we are, especially in certain sense, like when we are angry, for example, is we are even more similar to the apes. When we are happy, you know, it's like, and then I create my own storytelling by using like mainly ape and gorilla, but other animals also, to create my own story with this fable of like, because also where I'm coming in Iran, we have lots of old stories with animals and fable, and like, you know, like we have this very interesting book called Kalile Demne. It's just like coming from Sanskrit language. It was kind of like the time like between India and Iran. And what it's is the whole, all the characters are animals, mm-hmm. Kalile and Demne. And for me, it's kind of the same thing, but it's more abstract, it's more open, because we are living in a different time and there is not any moral conclusion. You know, there is like, it's just, again, it's different layer of information.
Yeah.
Like you can, as an audience, you can just create your own.
You have to create your own.
Well, we
conclusion.
Didn't, I guess, back then, we sit in the world in that way. It seems like we needed more to give like a, you know, the formulation was like, you know, you don't have so many ancient stories, like the end is open, for example, you know, it needed to go to a, sometimes morally or not moral, but kind of a conclusion or a closure, you know. But for me, it's like, as I believe everything is kind of relative, everything is kind of in the ambiguous stage, then I also leave my work, actually I exaggerate even in this ambiguity. Like I would say in my film, for example, I choose a character, like I can choose Scott as my subject, and I was like, Scott, like the deal is like, I'm gonna make your portrait almost looks like a documentary, but the deal is like, I can manipulate your reality as much as I want to create this ambiguity of like almost arriving to the hybrid portrait of you between your reality and what I as a maker I added to your reality. Like, what is my imagination and what I want to see from you, you know, or it's all also like, I mean, you should
this
see
is interesting.
It's really, yeah.
You make films like
yeah,
this?
Yeah, I make like a long feature film. Like,
where can I find them?
I'm making the second one, but the first one I can send you the link.
Yeah.
I actually did it with my parents.
Okay.
And then my parents, it was kind of...
In Tehran, you followed them around with the camera?
Yeah, for 2 years. Yeah. And then it's funny because the ambiguity goes even further because constantly as a viewer, you're like, oh, fuck, his parents,
yeah.
You know, how he dared to ask them like this weird act or, you know, but because the deal with them was like, mom, you are my actor now, you're an actress now, you're not anymore my mom. Then
yeah.
It's, you know, I think because also I had this experience myself in my reality, like, you know, I did an interview for Apartamento magazine and then when they sent me to review the interview, it was full of misunderstanding. Maybe somehow in purpose, somehow just maybe I didn't explain well. You know, like our perception is, you know, if you go to watch a film, like when we came out, I saw a different film than you. Like everything is like that, you know. Then I was about like, shall I tell them like this, the interview is not correct somehow? But I was like, who really cares? I mean, like, how much you can control your reality, you know? How much you can, like, I give you another example to make it clear. Like, if you're a researcher, you make research about, let's say, Picasso. It was more than, like, 100 or 1,000 books about him. I'm sure if you start to read them, you can find that so many points are, you know, not the same. Then it's not like the writers wanted to invent his life because it's just the whole life is about that, you know. And then by exaggerating this, I'm just reminding to my audience, then don't believe to any reality, you know. Like if because this is written in New York Times doesn't mean this is real. I mean, you are a writer, you're a journalist, you know, like it became like a fact point when it's in media, but like who write it, you know, who is like, I invented this reality and I know I'm lying, but you don't know I'm lying, you know. But we live in the way, like some facts, I think we believe unnecessarily too much to certain facts, certain reality. And we, as a human, it seems like we were forced to make some belief and some trust. I guess we needed that, but I don't need that. I actually love living in the completely ambiguous world. Like nothing has a fixed sense or fixed, you know. Like I can say like through the time and then century, things change, you know, like the meaning of bad and good is... You know, what we are living today, if you make a video and show it like 500 years ago, people would think like a techno party would be completely a zombie. But we enjoy that today, you know. Is that, who said is this bad or good, you know?
Yeah. It's funny when you... Sometimes I think about... I was part of the underground rave culture in Australia. And I think sometimes about what watching a video of us with no sound and no drugs would be like. And I've seen videos of us and I turned off the sound and it's weird. All these people with sunglasses at night and lollipops, you know, they do kind of look zombie-ish. You know, I wouldn't say it's an activity that has a particularly high return on investment. It is hedonistic. I knew a friend. I continue to know this guy. One of my friends. He was at a rave in LA. And the DJ... slit his own throat on stage and like committed suicide in front of all these people.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I don't know. I don't think my friend was... my friend had gone home. He saw the video afterwards. He'd gone home like 30 minutes before this happened. that's some heavy, that's heavy, you know? And then people, they're not even sure if this is happening.
I mean, like, if you know who was that and what.
I could try to find whatever information, but I don't, there was no documentary made.
Sure, sure.
It was, this is filmed on like iPhones.
Mm.
And then, you know, people in the crowd, they don't know what's happening. Are they on acid? Is this actually happening or is it in my mind, you know?
Mm.
But no, it happened. And when I was in the rave scene, I saw nobody slit their throats, but there was violence sometimes. There was some dangerous things going on beyond the obvious, you know, beyond the overdose, which, I mean, that stuff happens as well sometimes. But, you know, one time this kid, we were in Sydney, he got in a fight with someone and anyway, his friends like came and they broke this guy's jaw. And they dislocated his jaw because he was on the ground and they were like kicking him. Raves are not, I don't know. I'm just, you were talking about like people 500 years ago would think they're zombies. Raves can be a lot of fun, of course. But there's a dark, seedy underbelly to them. And it depends where you are, who you're with, what you're doing, like what, you know, what the vibe is. But I've had some really amazing experiences at raves, and I've also heard some fucking horror stories from this scene. I don't know, sorry to go down this road. You mentioned techno parties, and I think about it. It's strange, right? Like, I mean, you can't make electronic music without electronic equipment. So 300 years ago, they hear all these noises, they would think it's like witching.
Yeah, sure. Also, like, we're like a factory chicken, you know. Like, for me, this is the answer of like, wow, how we managed to, you know, arrive to this stage, which is.
We're a factory what?
Chicken.
Like, oh, chicken. You know,
The one, like, you have the one growing in the nature and you have the one in a factory, you know. And then.
We are factory chicken. Oh. Yeah.
Kind of,
yeah. Lovely, that's good.
Yeah, I mean, like, when you were born in cesarean, you call it cesarean?
It's
a French word, I don't know. Like, yeah, I mean, like, everything is artificial, chemical.
And all the food in the U.S. with these weird additives, you know, this and GMOs, les OGM, the whatever.
And once you accept this reality, it's just like, it is a part of it, you know, like, why we are all attracted to drug, or I mean, like, not, I'm not talking about only ecstasy, all these pills and
anything. Why are we wearing clothes? Why are we
part
the
of
haircuts?
Our gene now, you know? Because it's just like it's part of a reality, and then, but that's why I mean, like, when you have different reality, the sense also change with that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do know what you mean. I think that we are factory chickens and that there's a lot of beauty, I mean real beauty and flourishing to be found by returning to nature a little bit. There's this Chekhov quote that I really like. Man is the only animal who refuses to be what he is.
Hmm.
Nice. I like that. It's true. We're fighting. We're not. I'm. You know, I'm not a chicken. I'm a zebra. I'm this. You know, you're a chicken. I think humans are extraordinary at the rationalizations and the explanations we come up with for our own existence. But it's hard to think that we're just, Earth is just like a rock in space in an infinitely large expanding universe. I mean,
sorry.
Gesundheit. How do you make sense of this? If we're a rock in space, if we're just floating around, you know, and we're all little inconsequential ants, how does one find meaning? If there is meaning, I think there is meaning.
I didn't really understand your question. It's like,
in a universe, in a incredibly large and indifferent universe, how do we find meaning in our lives as humans?
Well, I mean, I guess we have different approaches. Like, as I said before, I mean, like, I think there is some people, they have tendency of create barrier and, you know, life has a meaning if you have a structure for it. But for me, it's the opposite. Like, I'm always looking for a different reality, like different, like for me, like imagination is the base of like I think, not that mean like I'm against any structure, it's not that. Mm. But I think like the openness to accept different reality, I think that's the way we can make the evolution happening, you know, like this, because that's kind of a way of like being out of this jail, you know, because I think for me, they're like every belief, every imagination can become part of a reality if we really believe that, you know, like it's really, I don't know, the example is like if I say like the moon doesn't exist, you know, if I totally, I believe that it can create it. Different reality, a different path to go different, you know. Then I think we arrive at the, for me at least, we arrive to the sense of like after 2200, you know, like all these years, I think now maybe it's time. I mean, I feel we are ready to finally answer so many like mysterious questions, like about the parallel world, about like, because there is no surprises anymore for a human being, you know, like it was when, for me, like when I was teenager, when my cousin said like, oh, there is something called internet, in the future you can buy stuff from there, I was like, are you nuts? Like, this is, I mean, I was surprised and shocked in the term. I couldn't even accept it. Mm-hmm. The most basic thing today. But what it can make you shocked today? Right, what can I say? Like, you are like, okay, shocked maybe for like 10 seconds. And you're like, okay, it can happen. You know? Then that's a great stage of like creating new reality and finding the things we were not ready to answer.
You're right.
About the state of dream, like in my work, I do also lots of research about like unconsciousness, dream, the state of like mind through like the drug, like ketamine, and you know, all this. As I said, like the question about our brain and the eye and the organ and the, like the perception again, it's a very like how, you know, how all these things are connected, and then I'm sure we are not too far to open the gate, you know,
the gate to what,
to the information we thought we wouldn't, I mean, like
before, it's like spiritual information
can be also, but it's more like it's just like, you know, for example, like human being was always like, we don't know where we are from and we don't know where we are going. That's, mm-hmm. That was the philosophy I grew with. But I think we are not too far to understand where we came from and where we are going. All this mystical question, you know.
What brings you joy and fulfillment? What brings you joy and fulfillment?
being diving to this, all these ideas, you know, and create my, I mean, like, again, feeling like gifted to be able to create a small portion of this imaginary world and being able to show it to others.
Like, but is it imaginary? I mean, you breathe life into it.
Yeah. Because I think the whole idea is not like, it's not one person can open this gate. It's the, you know, it's a, the whole connection. It's a chain. Like, we create this chain. And but it's, as I said, like, I feel closer to the one. They are looking for this different reality, not the one or can find a joy in the what structure is or reality already, you know.
Right. Yeah.
My life was kind of a Disney movie. Like, if I tell you about like how I grew up and how I arrived here with no money, I didn't know anyone in Paris, I didn't speak the language, and now I'm living in a nice flat, being able to do all my, like, I can say almost I don't have any dream didn't come true except few, you know. And then I know, like, hopefully, I mean, the one is related to me, I feel like I can make it. And that's, I think that's because I always believe to certain other power. I don't know what it is, but it's kind of like, yeah. Like, it's is the belief, I think. It's the...
In a spiritual, higher power, energy, being.
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's definitely spiritual. It's because it's beyond physics. Mm. But if you label it in the spiritual, what we have in, again, in mainstream culture, no.
No, but a lot of things.
Yeah, of course.
Well, art. You know, people call all kinds of things art, yeah, that maybe aren't really art.
It's still very wide, you know. There is no label for it. I don't know where is it. Sometimes I'm like, you say like, thanks universe. I mean, like, okay, is it really universe? Is it like, thanks whatever, you know? I mean, like, I tattoo this. It's an Arab word, but we use it also in Iran, in Farsi. It's written shok. Mm. Means gratitude, because I think like every day I have to just be thankful to something, but I don't know what it is. But I'm also like, again, this, like, I like this ambiguity of like, why I don't know what it is, why I need to know, you know, like, or maybe I will answer it one day. Like,
that's interesting.
Yeah,
that interesting that you don't need to know what it is, just it's okay to know that it's there. That's enough.
Because you just, I mean, by age, I just learned the one I really, I think they're for me, the one I really see them as a spiritual person are the one they don't label themselves in these categories, you know. That's why I said like the...
Right. It's not about the category or the label. They just are.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you'd like to discuss about your art or your life or Paris?
Well, we have Paris more and more.
You do?
It's a nice, I mean, it works for me as a, like, it's a nice combination of order and disorder.
Yeah?
Yeah.
In what sense? What's the disorder in Paris?
Well, I mean, like, it's a mess city, like, it's,
yeah,
you know, like, I was living also 2 years in Amsterdam, and I just realized like how much I feel much comfortable, because Amsterdam, I mean, Netherlands is the opposite.
It's nice, like, tidy and clean.
Yeah,
and
I got so many fine every day, every week I had letters from,
oh, from whatever, your bike is parked in the wrong, yeah, da, da, da.
It's not just like, also because because I'm coming from Iran, like, I know like the total mess, which is like my country, like, it's, and then here is, as I said, it's, I feel
nice mélange entre les deux.
Exactly.
Exactly. That's cool. And what about Tehran versus Paris? Do you think the two cities are similar in some ways?
I can't say about the cities, but I think definitely, I mean, like modern Iranian culture is, it's inspired a lot with French culture, because French culture was a dominant culture in the, like, from 17th century to 16th century to early 20th century, you know, like we, all the elites and all this, you know, like any other.
Sitting outside, drinking coffee, the cafes. Yeah, that's what I don't know if that's French or where that's from, but it's
but
something.
Even language, like all these like Latin words coming from French pronunciation into our language, and also like, yeah, I mean, like, I don't know, like even talking about Champs-Élysées, or, you know, like, it's funny because even in Tehran, you feel like people know already, like they've been in Champs-Élysées, because, you know, it's really like this kind of, how can I say, like a weird connection, you know.
And you said you're 40, 41?
Yeah.
So, can you do the math? So you came after the revolution? You were a young boy.
I
you were just born, maybe.
The revolution happened in 79. I was born in 82.
82.
I was born actually.
That's too much math for me to have done.
Yeah, yeah. No worries. I was born in the first year of the 8 years wars between Iran and Iraq.
Hmm.
Then the war was finished when I was 8 years old. Then we had all this, like, this tension and, you know, like, all this weird situation after the war. And then, you know, it's, Iran is always kind of, you always have surprises in the cricket board. I mean, in a good and bad sense. Like.
Do you think, as a young boy, like, when you were a teenager, were you making art a little bit? Were you interested in art as a 12-year-old or 13-year-old?
Yeah, I used to, I don't know, I always thought it was everywhere, at least in Iran, but I just find out recently, no, it was only in my family. I used to have this, how you say, like the cahier, like the small...
Cahier, notebook.
Notebook, yeah, which I used to create all these characters, like some boy, some girl,
yeah,
with name and with clothes, and like, and I could spend like hours like telling, like, they party together, they went to vacation, and yeah, I think that was probably my early artworks. And then I study art. I started study art when I was 17 years old after mathematics. Yeah,
cool.
Yep.
After mathematics. Never very good at math. Took calculus. That was the last math I took. It never made sense to me. I was always, I liked writing, and I was good at writing, and I could write across anything, you know, history, philosophy, English. Great. I was an excellent writer in high school. I was a good student. Now I do it professionally. But, and then science, the only science I liked was biology. I did not like chemistry. I did not like physics. I never even took physics. Because it was like, there's only one answer. It has to be, it's so exact. If you make a mistake up here, you know, by the time you're a few steps later, everything's wrong because the first calculation was wrong. But some people love that methodical logic. Logical approach to things. I hated it. So that's really surprising to me that you were studying mathematics and then you became this awesome multidisciplinary artist. Wow.
Yeah, I think it's funny that the opposite impact in
my... Yeah.
Yeah.
Math. Well, you know, I think we need both.
Yeah,
we need
of course. Both. Also, I think in certain age, you're just... I mean, I was like that. I was, like, watching something and, like, analyzing a situation to be completely against that, you know, like... Because also, like, my country situation was full of controversial situation, like,
controversial.
Know,
yeah, yeah.
Then I was like, you had to always rethink, and like, because you were like feedback, like so many things, you knew it wasn't, again, like what you said about like in America, or, you know, in the dead, in a Disney movie, for me organically was in that way, like, because I could feel like this is not me, this is not true, this is like just they try to brainwash you or manipulate you, you know. Then I was always kind of but I didn't know, of course. I was like probably 10 years old sometimes, 15 years old, you know. You just realize much later like how you drive your life.
Well, that wraps up all my questions on these nice big thick sheets of paper. I couldn't I don't have a printer at home, but there's this architectural firm like in my building, like this architect's office. So I walked into the architect's office because I see them every day. I said, "Hey guys, I need you to print something for me." And they printed it, and they brought it out on this extra thick, nice paper.
Nice.
And I thought, I'm going to ask them to print stuff again.
You can keep it as a souvenir.
As a souvenir, yeah. But thank you so much for coming on to the show. It was a real pleasure.
Yeah.